Welcome to this mini-series of podcasts for World Athletics, where myself, Liliana Hora, Women in Sport Manager at Athletics Ireland, and Vicky Hyten, the founder of the Female Coaching Network, will be interviewing a number of coaches who had a role at this year's World Athletics Championships. Whether it be as a team coach or a personal coach, we want to find out about their experiences of this year's World Championships in Eugene, what their roles involved, and how they managed through the busiest summer of athletics to date.
So a big welcome to our latest guest, Coach Hayley Harrison, who is joining us today in her spare few minutes of this summer. Hayley has coached alongside her husband Drew in Ireland for over 25 years, and their athletes have competed at all major athletics championships, including World and European Championships and the Olympic Games. Hayley is probably best known for coaching Irish 400 metre hurdler Thomas Barr, who has competed at European, World and Olympic medal, winning bronze at the 2018 European Championships in Berlin. Based at the University of Limerick, Hayley works for Sport Ireland as a coach development and education officer, responsible for coach development programmes and high performance coach support programmes. During this year's jam-packed summer of athletics, Hayley coached Thomas Barr to the World Championships in Eugene, the European Championships in Munich, and a number of Diamond League races. Hayley, first question I'd like to ask you, as we are coming to the very end of the season and the summer, have you managed to catch your breath yet from all the travel and all the coaching duties that you've been involved with so far this year?
Well, you catch me on a very rare holiday, Vicky. So I suppose I'm in the process of catching up. Our son has just graduated from a Masters of Science in Pure Maths in Glasgow just this last week. So me and Drew, we decided to take a little bit of a holiday after that, and that's where I am now. But in terms of catching our breath, I think hopefully this next week or two, that's when we'll try and do that. We'll just take a little bit of stock, you know, about what happened in the year. Was it good? Was it not so good? What could we have done better? And almost like do a review of this season and preparing for the next season, which is what we normally do, but don't normally get to do it whilst we're on a bit of a holiday.
And we're going to rewind to the World Championships in July in Eugene. And we'd love to know about your experience as a personal coach to Thomas Barr. So can you talk about kind of the preparation, how you coped with the jet lag, and what your day-to-day duties look like in your role as personal coach while you were there?
Yeah, the Eugene was in many respects not dissimilar to Tokyo last year for the Olympic Games, but it was 8 hours the other direction. So from where we are in Ireland, Tokyo was 8 hours forward and Eugene was 8 hours behind. But in terms of jet lag, it's really almost identical. In the run-up to Eugene, Tom had had a few sort of Achilles niggles, and the training had not been as optimal as we'd have liked. Now, Tom's had many sort of bits of injuries, most notably a labrum tear in his hip, which he still has. So it's not unusual to have injuries coming up to a major championships. Not just with Tom, but with all athletes, really. So it wasn't unusual, but it wasn't optimal. Tom actually flew out a few days before Drew and I, because actually Drew's the head coach of the mixed relay team. So we were actually out there together, which was unusual, but nice. So when we got there, the holding camp for Ireland was just fantastic. It was down in the area of Mackenzie River. And it was actually a basketball, almost like holding camp, a training camp. And it was, I think, for the Irish camp, we were only a small team, and was perfect, really. We had two cars for the 14 athletes, and we had a track that had been closed from the public just for us. And it really was fantastic. And that was great. Then we moved into, if you want to call it, the village, which was the University of Oregon, in Eugene. And while it was fantastic to have the accommodation right next to the track, from my point of view as a 400 hurdles coach, My main concern was the fact that the warm-up track was square. So for a 400 meter hurdles, whether it was Tom or anybody else competing, this was just a bit of a nightmare. So you couldn't warm up properly. You couldn't do your start. You couldn't really practice anything that you would really want on that warm-up track. So there was a training track, which was good, in fact, very good. But in terms of out-and-out preparation on the day of competition, that warm-up track was a bit of a disaster. So it was square, and it only had three lanes. So you had all the people who were trying to warm up for the 400 hurdles on a track that was just not suitable. So that started off as a main concern and still ended up as a main concern. And I don't think it helped anybody. But because Tom had so few races and because of this Achilles, it possibly affected him a little bit more than others. I don't think the food was as good as it might have been, but there were lots of other things that were really good about it. The fact that the warm-up area was right next to the track is fantastic, because it's not always. And the tented area for the teams was also right next to the track. So, I'd say it wasn't optimal, especially because of that warm-up track, but there were lots of good things about it.
And what's your role as a coach when you're at a major chance? Because obviously you've kind of done all the hard work and the years of coaching the technique and getting the athlete fit and physically conditioned. What is your role day to day while you're at a major chance with Tom?
It's final preparation. It's really almost like that fine tuning. So you're right. All the hard work is done. I don't think anybody should really think of it as a coach being at the championship that you're going to make any major changes. You're not, but it is the fine tuning. It's the teensy little bits of amounts that might make the difference. And that's what you're doing. And sometimes in the championships, and it wasn't the case in Oregon, but sometimes it's about keeping people away from your athletes because they just, with all due respect, they kind of get in the way. So sometimes my role has been to just keep people away from him. But also this time I was asked, as quite often I am, even though I'm there as personal coach, I'm sometimes asked to be what's called sprints cover. So for any athlete who doesn't have their own personal coach there, then I would be there to assist. Now, when I say assist, it would be their own coaches would have their programs written, and I would literally just be there to oversee it. So I wouldn't be coaching at all in terms of coaching somebody else's athlete, but you're overseeing a program that athlete's coach has given, and then providing feedback to that coach. So in this instance, Noelle Morrissey wasn't able to be there for Sarah Lavin. Her own son was actually graduating with his PhD in London. So I was just overseeing Sarah's training on behalf of Noelle. And I also looked after a little bit of the 4x1 female women's team until Daniel Kilgallen arrived for that. So yeah, those were my roles really. So primarily for Tom, but also sprints cover. And then really just as a staff, we're almost like just looking after each other's back, just trying to work as a staff team. Because sometimes Paul McNamara is the high performance director, the amount of work that he might have to do on any given day could be massive. And if any of us could alleviate some of his work for him, then let me try and do that.
Busy few days then.
Busy few days.
Yeah. And Hayley, can I ask a question there? Obviously it's an athlete-centered world. Everything has to revolve around the athletes, but like going from championship to championship this summer in particular has probably been absolutely exhausting. What sort of strategies are ye as coaches and support staff like implementing to make sure that you're fresh and you're, you know, at your A game for your athletes? Because I know you're putting your athletes first, but what do you need to do? Because it's obviously a very high pressurized environment to be in.
That's a really good question, and I don't think we do it well across the board. I do feel very lucky to be working and have Drew as not only my husband, but also as the person that I coach with. And because we can have the conversations, we can help each other. I know some of the other coaches have struggled, especially this year, when they feel as though they don't have a support mechanism. So whilst I think Drew and I probably could get more support, I think that would be fair. I think we are lucky to have each other, but not many do have that. And I think the other thing there with Lillianne, I said, I think it does come with experience. Mm. The more you do it, the better you get at it.
Yeah.
But for those who are relatively novice coaches, or even if they're not novice coaches, if they're at a major championships for the first time, or even the first few times, it is really tough because it is exhausting. And then you don't know sometimes how to react. Because like you said, you're always about your athlete. And athletes don't always perform as well as they might. So it's that support for them. But yeah, who gives the support to you? I would say in the Irish team, the person who probably gives the most support to me outside Drew would be Teresa McDade as the team manager. I think she's very good at that.
Brilliant.
She's always there just to sort of say, and how are you?
Yeah.
And I'd say there's not many actually do that. But yeah, I would single out Teresa. I think she's very good.
Yeah, because it's actually interesting. A long time ago when I actually was finishing up my degree in Dublin City University, I did sports science and health. And I'm definitely not a whole pile academic, but I did my final year project with David Passmore, and it was all around elite coach burnout and fatigue, obviously within an Irish context. And some of the stories that I heard, like, were horrendous of what the coaches were enduring, you know, horrendous health issues, even like ending up in hospital, people like coaches having heart attacks because like that, they were taking in all their athletes' energies, they were putting their athletes first to the demise of their own health and well-being. And it's obviously something, like you said, that if you're able to identify it, it's brilliant, but communicating it and being supported, like having that support system around you, is probably something that, as you said, if you're beginning, it might be very difficult to do. But should there be a place like that within an elite environment when you do go away, that people can come together and kind of share those experiences to alleviate some of those stresses that you may be feeling as coaches?
I think so. I think it would be really good. I think it would be good on a national basis, but also on a games basis. Like, they do have the coaches' houses. It's not a physical house. It's almost like a space where coaches can go, and they do have those at the World Championships and at the Olympic Games. They have a series of seminars at the likes of the European Championships. And it is a place where coaches can go. And I think the organisers of those would like to think that's a space where coaches can gain support. I think the reality is that it's more a bit of a talking shop and a bit of a bravado shop. Personally speaking, I certainly wouldn't go there if I was looking for help and support.
Mm.
But it is a really good thing to have in terms of coaches getting together. But I don't think it's serving the purpose of support. I do think it's serving the purpose of information and analysis.
Yeah.
And from that point of view, those coaches' houses are brilliant. They're fantastic.
And before I go back to Vicky on that, if you could, obviously as your role, obviously as a coach, but your own experience working with Coaching Ireland, what would that support look like if you could put something together?
It would be perhaps a group of very experienced coaches and or team managers who would just be there almost like for people to talk to, mm-hmm, at major championships. I think at a national level, we can do probably something a little bit more bespoke. But at a championships, I think just having some very, very experienced people there available for coaches to talk to. I think that would go a long way.
And then to add to the burnout, straight after the World Champs, I know that you didn't. There was a the Commonwealth Games were going on, but which obviously you missed out on, and then straight into the European Championships. So with all that, trying to look after your athletes going into the Europeans, and then yourself from the exhaustion of the Worlds, what was that like going straight from a major championship to another major championship?
It's not easy, is the honest answer. It this year was strange in the fact that it was a World Championships and a European Championships, and the only reason there were two together is because the Worlds were bumped from last year because the Olympics was bumped. So it should have been the European year, and it would have been Europeans effectively on its own. And it was the Worlds that was bumped. But normally it does happen once every 4 years because the Olympic Games are always in the same year as a European year. So it's not unusual to have those two championships together. But it wouldn't normally be this year in 2022. The European Championships are a very, very different feel, certainly from an Irish perspective, because we had 35 at the European Championships, whereas we had 14 at the Worlds. So the team at the global championships, so the Worlds and the Olympics, are much smaller from an Irish athletics perspective. But the European Championships are an amazing building block for many Irish athletes. So for some, it will be the pinnacle of their careers, and it's brilliant. For others, it will be a stepping stone, but you do end up with a much bigger team. We potentially, even from our own squad, we potentially had sort of three or four that might have been there, whereas we knew that they wouldn't have made the World Championships. So you have a different cohort of athletes, and that cohort of athletes, are at maybe a slightly different level. And like I said, it might be their pinnacle, or it might be they're young and they're looking to progress onto something further. So it's a different feel, and you do have a bigger team, and you do potentially have different roles. So again, on this occasion, yes, I was there as personal coach to Tom, but again, I was sprint cover. But you end up covering for more people because obviously it's a bigger team. And in terms of coaching burnout and coach support, yeah, it is tough to effectively have 10 weeks of what I would say championship competition and training, because even when you came back from Oregon, you had those sort of 3 and a bit weeks, excuse me, to get ready for the next one. So as a coach, you've got to figure out, do we kind of come back down from Oregon and come back up again for Munich? Do you try and keep at a level? Those are the kind of the decisions that all coaches who had athletes at both championships would have to make. And I don't think there's a set answer to that. I think it's very much, the coach and the athlete, what would suit them best, and also the events that they do. I think what was amazing this year, not that it had anything to do with the Irish team, but the likes of Eilish McColgan, Britain to do so phenomenally well at the Worlds, the Commonwealths, and the Europeans in the 5 and the 10K, that's unprecedented. So I would say normally people would say that's just not possible, and the fact that she's proved with her coach, I know it's her mom, but and she knows it obviously extremely well, but I think that will be looked at in future to say, okay, it can be done. And I would say typically this year, that would have been seen as something that potentially couldn't be done. So yeah, I think there's been lots of things about multi-championships this year that probably will be analysed by the people who do that kind of thing, to see what can be learned from this year. And I'd say a lot can be learned from this year.
So I guess in another season where you do have those two championships right next to each other, I guess bringing coaches like Liz Nuttall, who have, you know, helped Elise do that amazing, crazy summer of the 5 and 10Ks, and finding out what their tactics were, or what, you know, exactly how you said, did you bring them down to come back up or keep them even? I guess speaking to coaches like that would be useful for future.
I think so. Especially, I said, I'm not an expert in the longer middle distance, so anybody who's listened to this who thinks I don't know what I'm talking about, they're absolutely right. But I think for those people who are in those events, you know, even just to talk to Liz would be amazing. Just to say, like, exactly what was the plan? What did they do? Because I think the results of Eilish were phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I think the world over will acknowledge that.
Absolutely, yeah. And just one more question on the Europeans. I would love to know your opinion on the qualifying rounds that were brought in, where some of the lower ranked athletes were made to potentially run three races. Some of the higher ranked potentially only ran two. And I think I'm right in saying that Thomas was one of those that had to potentially have run three. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so they brought it in Berlin. So they brought it in. Is it Berlin they brought it in? Or did they even bring it in? They've definitely had it in for a few championships on the European front. I think by and large, those people who are in that top 12, who don't have to run the extra race, they are delighted, because they're definitely at an advantage. Tom's point of view is that he actually likes the three rounds, but he thinks everybody should do them. He just doesn't think it's fair. Even when he was in that top 12, he actually doesn't think it's fair, because the whole point of athletic, well, any sport really, is that on the start line, you're all equal. And as soon as you put that extra round in, you're not all equal. And so, yeah, I do agree with Tom. I don't think they should do it. I think you either make the standards tougher and you have fewer people in it, or you, even if you have the quota, which they seem very keen on, yes, have the quota, but again, only have, say, 24 people in it. Now, I think that would be a shame for the sport, because, like I said, I think the Europeans is a really nice kind of stepping stone to global championships. But in answer to your question, and in short terms, no, I don't like it. I don't think it's fair. And I think even when we're coming to Paris, there's the introduction of the repechage, and that's all the way up to 1500 meters. I can't see how anybody who has got an extra round of 1500 meters is ever going to, you know, potentially make a difference in a final. I think they're creating a discrepancy now between, you know, the ones who are already good and the ones who are kind of not, and they're not really giving them a chance to break through into that top 12. So if it was me, I would make everybody do the three rounds.
And Hayley, I suppose one thing that comes to mind now at the moment is that off season for a lot of athletes has just commenced across the world. And I know you've mentioned that you are currently on holidays, but what does the off season look like for an elite coach like yourself? And when do you and Drew sit down to start beginning to look towards next year's world champs? Or are you saying, I don't want to hear that question right now, I'm on holidays?
I think the reality is I don't think we ever really stop thinking about athletics. The only difference the off season makes is that we're not on the track with the athletes. But that is the only difference. Like, we will take this time, even though we're on holiday, we will take this time to, you know, analyze the season, not just from the athlete's point of view, but from our point of view. You know, could we have done things better? Could we have done things differently? what might we look at next year? Could we change things? And I think it's really important that coaches do that, even if it's been a phenomenally successful year, just to then do the same again because it was successful, I don't think is a good plan. So I do feel quite strongly that you spend, even though it's off season, that you take that time to talk through with somebody. I said, again, I'm lucky because Joe and I work together, but for those coaches who are kind of working on their own, to find somebody that they can have those conversations with, just as a sounding board, like, what do you think about? Could I have done this? What, why might that have happened? Was this something that I could have done better, could have done differently if I'd have? And I think we need to go through all of that before we can start back winter training. Because if you don't, you're then starting off on something that you might have to change partway through, and that's not good for the coaches or the athletes. So yeah, off season for me would be still thinking about athletics, still trying to figure out how I could do things better. Even like, is there new research out there that might help us in changing something, something that we've not done before or tried before. So yeah, coming up with, if you want to call it, our analysis of ourselves, but also our analysis of the athletes before we meet the athletes for their annual reviews. Because it's, I think for us, it's quite important that we've analysed things before we talk to them, and we'll try and talk to all of our main players in our squad before we come back to training, because quite often they have ideas of things that they might like to see done differently, or that they've seen something that they would like to try. So we like to meet with all of them and on our analysis, and then we can put something together before we start winter training. But do we completely switch off from athletics?
The life
Maybe some
of
coaches do.
exactly
Maybe
that's the
some.
life of an elite coach, that's always going to be the way. But I'm glad you brought it up, Hayley, because my next question was one going to be I suppose about the like unique coaching dynamic that you are in with your husband, because recently enough we just had Ashley Kovacs on, and she joined us to discuss, I suppose, her unique coaching role of coaching her husband and world shot put silver medalist Joe Kovacs. So obviously coaching side by side with Drew is probably something that is very special to you both. But how do you manage it and facilitate it working so closely together? And is there ever a case of good cop versus bad cop when you are coaching?
That's a very good question. I think ultimately we have the same goal and we have the same values. And I think that's the biggest thing in terms of working together. I would say Drew's very much the coach's scientist. Like, he's a professor of sports biomechanics. I think anyone who would know Drew would understand what I mean by Drew as coach's scientist. I would say I'm more coach's artist. I would say I'm probably better at reading people's body language and things like that. Drew is, he's phenomenally good at sort of all the, I'm good, I'd say I'm very good at the hurdles technical kind of work, and I'm pretty good at the sprints technical work, but Drew would be good at technical across the board. So even if it's not a sport that we would coach from a technical point of view, as in the mechanics of movement, Drew is, I suppose I'm biased, but I think he is phenomenal. And I think to have that and to have his research background, so I think that's, for me, to have that there is just amazing. I'm not going to ask him, but I'd say he would probably say I'm better at the softer skills. And I think when you bring those two together, we're a good team. We are a good team. there's definitely things that I would refer to him to and vice versa. And in terms of good cop, bad cop, I would say not, but I would say that some athletes would go to one of us first. There's some, I don't think it really matters to them, it's whoever's available, but there are definitely some who I think would prefer to come to me or would prefer to go to Drew. Now, that's not to say that I think that one of us is a better coach than the other. I don't think we are. I think we're both good, really good. But yeah, maybe just personalities. There are some that would prefer Drew or me. Yeah, occasionally good cop, bad cop, but not often.
Depending on the topic that comes up.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, I think... Yeah, I would say I'm typically better with the men. I can be diplomatic, but on a coaching front, I almost prefer not to be. I'm kind of pretty much straight down the line. And sometimes I think the men just appreciate that more than the women at times. Not all women.
Understand. And Hayley, then your role, like the other part of you as well that you spoke about, is your role as coach education officer for Sport Ireland. It's obviously a role with great responsibility and impact, not just in athletics but across the board. Since starting, how has the landscape for coaching in athletics changed since you began, maybe in Ireland but also maybe some things you picked up internationally as well?
Specifically to athletics?
Yes, athletics.
Okay. I think there's more of a general acknowledgement that the coach is a really important part of the athlete's life and athlete's performance. I don't think in Ireland we are yet at the stage where coaches are considered in as high esteem as other sports. So if you look at the likes of tennis, the likes of golf, the likes of swimming, you know, it's a profession that people can go into. You know, if somebody at the age of 12 says they want to be a tennis coach, that's a profession. You can go and be a tennis coach and you can get paid handsomely, and that's your equivalent of a teacher's salary or whatever. In athletics, potentially we are getting there, but I do feel we're a long way off in Ireland. In other countries, you know, the athletics coaches are paid very well. You know, even if you like, say in America, I know it's a different system, it's a collegiate system, but there is a college coach whose job it is to make sure that athletes who come there perform well and you know, are responsible almost like to the university for the results of those athletes. I'm not saying I'd like to see an American type system in Ireland, but I would like to see a time, and hopefully it's not too far away, but it's certainly not the next few years, where a child can say, I want to be an athletics coach. And they sort of say, okay, so what you need to do is you need to go to, these are the universities in which you can go and do a coaching degree. These are the places where you can get coaching experience. And at the moment, that just doesn't exist. But I do think the awareness of coaching has changed, which is good. One of the things that does still worry me is what used to be classed as coaching when I was younger and when I first started coaching, is that the kind of coach did everything, you know. So they did the S&C, they did the work on the track, they did all the planning, they did everything. And now it seems to be the buzz way of doing it, which is you completely separate everything out. So you've got your S&C coach, some have got a speed coach, they've got coaches all over the place. But the person who is there on the track with them all the time is the one who spends most of the time with them and gets least of the recognition, and certainly the one that doesn't get paid. And I think that's, personally, I think that's a mistake. I can see that in team sports, that works very well. And I can see that sports where everything is centralized, that can work very well. But in something like athletics, where you've got some phenomenally good coaches around the country, they're doing all the hard work. They're not getting financial assistance to do the coaching, but yet the S&C coaches, you know, the speed coaches, you know, the something else's, and it's all been whittled away to the point where the coach who's doing most of the work is almost made to feel as though, yeah, well, the bit you're doing really isn't that important at all. But all these other bits, that's where it all happens. And I, quite frankly, I disagree. I think the coach, even if they want to have somebody else doing the S&C and stuff, no problem. They can absolutely do that. But it should be effectively their choice, because they do understand it. They can do it themselves, but they want somebody else to do it. That's fine. I don't have an issue with that at all. But for somebody, for the S&C people to come in and say, well, I can do this better than you, I disagree. Because, and the reason I disagree is because they don't know the athlete as well as the coach. And so the coach is almost, and I've seen it a lot in Ireland, an awful lot in Ireland, where the coach is made to feel as though they don't have the expertise. And I feel quite strongly that they do have the expertise, but they're made to feel as though they don't. And I think whether it's Sport Ireland coaching and in my role, or whether it's an Athletics Ireland role, I think we need to get the confidence back for those coaches to say, yes, they are able to do it. You know, maybe they choose not to, that's okay. But they need to be able to do all the bits that they're firing out. Not the medical stuff, not the sports science stuff. That's definitely another specialist area. But there's lots of elements of what I would call core coaching that is being almost like taken away from the coach. And I just feel that the coach is potentially losing all the information that they need to help their athlete do better. And I think we can do, something on that. And I think it's more to do with those specialists, you know, in an Irish context, so people in the Institute, like, let them help the coaches learn about their specialism so that the coach can learn about it. And then the coach can potentially do it themselves. If they don't want to, not a problem. But I think at the moment, that's a bit of a disconnect. And I suppose that's where my high performance coach support bit comes in terms of my job. That's what I'm trying to get the experts, as they're now being called, to help the coaches, not directly to the athletes, but help the coaches. Because I think it's the coaches that need the help, not the athletes.
And Hayley, there's lots of like nuggets of information there that obviously we can do as, you know, governing body practitioners, administrators, that we could feed back to make sure that we can actually put in appropriate action going forward to obviously help the coaches and obviously then eventually help the athletes. But as one of our most experienced coaches, what is something you know now that you wish you knew when you first started coaching?
That we can't always know everything, and that's okay.
Brilliant.
Because I think when you're young and you're upcoming, there's almost this pressure to have everything right, you know, and like what is right? Like when I was a young coach, I thought there was this version of right. And I just don't think there is. And I don't think that there's this golden nugget of a piece of information or a session that if I give it to you and you use it on your athletes, that it's going to have the same effect as it's had on mine. I just think that's nonsense. I think what we need to do is to be able to share information as coaches and not be scared that someone's going to take all of my knowledge. I think that's nonsense. I think what we need to do is sort of say, yeah, you can have my programs. That's no problem at all. But you've got to tell me why a certain session or a certain concept would be good for the athletes that you coach or not good. And that will make you a better coach. And when I was young, that was something that was completely alien to me. I thought there was a right answer. I thought there was the one way of doing it and I just had to find it. And I'm about as far away from that concept as I could possibly be.
Love it. Hayley, thank you so much. I'm very conscious that we've kept you a lot longer than the 30 minutes I said in the email. So just to finish, I'm going to ask you five quick fire questions. One word answers. There's okay. No right or wrong answer. This is all on you. So quick fire question one, speed or speed endurance?
Speed endurance.
Number two, name a non-athlete that you would like to coach.
I have no idea how to answer that question.
Number three, which is your favourite meet that you've ever been to?
European Championships, Berlin, 2018.
Number four, favourite athlete you have coached or never coached, just your favourite athlete of all time?
Alison Felix.
And lastly, maybe this might need a more than just a one word, the biggest lesson you've learned in your coaching career so far?
Coach the athlete.
Perfect. Thanks very much, Hayley. Really appreciate your insights and all that. I don't know about Lillianne, but I could have asked you another 10, 20 questions and picked at all the answers that you were saying. Really appreciate your time in that. Thank you for letting us disrupt your holiday. And hopefully you'll have as little athletics bombarding your holiday as possible from now on. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that, Hayley.
Thank you.